Welcome to Centering the Asian American Christian Podcast. This season, we're discussing the language that we use to talk about Asian American identities and experiences.
Join us each week for a conversation about speaking Asian American.
I'm Julie Yeun Kim.
And I'm Daniel Lee.
And we're your hosts. Thanks for joining us. I'm really excited that Centering is back for another season and also that I get to be a part of it. But I think I'm most excited about the topic of discussion, which is language. How do we speak Asian American, as you asked? And actually, that's where I want to start. What's so important about language that we would spend an entire season on this topic? And as Asian Americans, do we have a language problem that we need to examine?
Julie, this is kind of a weird question, right? This is a weird problem. In the beginning, when we founded the Asian American Center years ago, we realized something. We were interviewing people to figure out what they need, like what are the resources? What are the resources that Asian American pastors and leaders need? And we realized that a lot of the people weren't able to really articulate what their needs were. And we said, that's really odd. And then as you know, I've been teaching on Asian American identity ministry, I began to notice that many of the people, how we talk about Asian Americanness in a sense, was so crude, right? Like I grew up talking like this, like saying, oh, this is being Korean and it's bad. Like, oh, that pastor's very Korean, that's bad. Oh, but that pastor's very Americanized, it's good. I mean, why do we talk in such crude ways when Korea is this nation of like 3,000 years of history? And obviously, it's a lot more diverse than some narrow sense of what Koreanness is. There is something there. There is something in that stereotypical idea of Koreanness. But we're using such crude language that we can't really pinpoint what the problems are in our culture or the issues that we're trying to address.
I think that's a really interesting word, pinpoint. A lot of the Asian American folks that you were trying to work with couldn't actually articulate their needs. And you're saying that that is a language problem, that the lack of language keeps us from being able to even notice, articulate, share what we need. Can you say more about that?
Yeah. So when I started teaching, I started looking at like the issues of linguistics, cognitive linguistics, developmental linguistics. I said, what is happening here? There's something weird happening. Like my friend Ken Fong, he said he grew up saying the word Chinesey. Right, everything that's weird about his Chinese heritage is like, oh, my grandma is Chinesey. She smells like tiger balm and, you know, weird mushrooms and just whatever, right? And we were talking and saying, that's so bizarre because China has 5,000 years of history. It's this, like middle kingdom in a sense. But how do you reduce that down and use words like Chinesey? It turns out in developmental linguistics, there's actually this idea of overextension. When a child learns a word and learns a word like cat, oh, that's a cat, points to a cat and says, that's a cat. Points to a dog and says, that's a cat, right? Because that's actually using one word, overextending it to cover a wide range of stuff, right? So, because you don't have a lot of vocabulary. You don't have dog, you don't have horse, you don't have poodle, so you don't have all that. You just have cat. And everything with four legs that runs around the house is cat. And then you realize that's not what how you should use language. But when your vocabulary is very limited, that's how we talk. We have an overextension phenomenon happening in Asian America because our vocabulary isn't broad, right? And that's basically one of the issues and problems that we've identified early on in this work.
So you're saying Asian Americans are plagued by a limited vocabulary?
Yeah, I generally say that we babble. We're like literally like little kids, we babble. The level of articulation that we have about Asian Americanness, even for people who have PhDs in some other field, if they haven't gone through Asian American studies or been trained somehow to talk about Asian Americans in a very articulate way, we talk in this very crude way. Like, oh, you know, these people are Indian. You know how Filipinos are. And that way of talking is so crude, it's basically a stereotype, right? And the weird thing about stereotypes are the fact that stereotypes have truth in them. But what you want to do is take the truth out and not use stereotypes in that generalized way, because that generalized way does a lot of harm.
I think I'm starting to understand we have internalized stereotypes so deeply that we use stereotypes even to talk about our own selves. That's become our language. That reminds me of an experience that I had when I was first learning to teach. I was a TA at a large university, and our supervisor was giving us some really bleak information about students who are coming to college and how most of them, or not most, but many of them are performing below the level that they should be at as college students. And one of my peers asked, well, then how are these students getting into colleges if they're so underperforming in these areas? And something that my supervisor said has left an impression with me. She said, well, when almost 40% of students, I think that's what she said, almost 40%, almost half of the students are underperforming, we can't just call it an individual failure. This is probably an institutional failure. That was kind of a paradigm shift for me to start thinking about things beyond the individual and more institutionally. And I think that's really relevant here. How do institutions then kind of play a role in contributing to the lack of language that Asian Americans have?
Yeah. When you take like a well-educated Asian American, right, went to Harvard, for law school, whatever, they're able to articulate very well the white normative world that they live in, because their educational system was pretty much white normative. Now, when they talk, even at that person, Harvard graduate, whatever, when they start talking about Asian Americanness, they fall back, because all their education, their whole educational system, primary, secondary, you know, and upper education, it was all white normative. Like the novels you read, even about history, even the philosophical ideas, they cater to a white normative world. And it wasn't so much the fact that Asian Americans didn't exist, or the level of articulation about the nuances of Asian Americanness. It's not that they don't exist, it's that we didn't learn them. Let me give an example. My kids attend high school, well, school system in the SJV, right? 626, San Gabriel Valley. It's like one of the most Asian American school districts, areas in general. The student body is Asian American, predominantly Asian American majority, like I think it's almost like 70%. Even the teachers are Asian American. I mean, teachers are like second gen, right? So you have a lot of Asian American teachers as well. So you would think, hey, they would be very articulate about what it means to be Asian American. But even most of them, they know more about Black history than Asian American history. Because Asian American history still hasn't really made a big impact, and it hasn't been really being incorporated in our educational system or even American society as a whole, right? So what do? We use generic, stereotypical language to describe ourselves and describe other people. Because this is the language we've been formed with. This is the language we've internalized. These are the tools that we use to make sense of our lives.
What does it mean for language to be white normative?
There are certain ways that our society presents Asian Americans. So we might say, Asian Americans are too quiet. Asian Americans have a shame problem. A society tells us, white normative society tells us that we have certain kinds of problems and we don't have other kind of problems. Like it was very difficult, even like the whole anti-Asian racism was happening. It was very difficult for people to understand, like white society, it's just mainstream American society, even like a lot of the Black folks as well. They couldn't understand how Asian Americans can experience racism. Because racism, for a lot of people's minds, was a Black and white issue. So how would Asian Americans experience racism, right? To some degree, a lot of people think about Asian Americans in such a foreign way. Well, you are like recent immigrants. How would you even experience racism, right? So we don't use a category of race. We might use a category of Asian shame. So you experience some kind of racism, and we say, oh, I felt really shamed because I brought my Taiwanese lunch to school. I mean, it won't happen in SoCal because everybody's Asian American. But let's say you live somewhere, or it was like 10 years ago or somewhere in the middle of nowhere, and you bring like an Asian lunch and people make fun of you, and you said, oh, I felt ashamed. Oh, Asian Americans are sensitive because we're very shame-oriented people. Now, that's a category that's given to us by society. But it doesn't necessarily readily give us the category of racial microaggressions for Asian Americans. Now, people are learning that more recently, but there's still a lot of people who don't actually understand how microaggressions work, how racism works with an Asian American experience. Because American society doesn't really readily give us that category for us to use as Asian Americans. I mean, it's almost as though Asian Americans are so foreign that we're not American enough to experience racism.
Interesting. So that's because race and racism are white normative, or that we experience them or we think about them through a white lens, which necessarily excludes Asian Americans and our experiences. But then Asian Americans will respond to that by pathologizing themselves and saying, this is how I felt. This is what is wrong with me and my people.
Yeah, I don't think people understand the fact that language is not something. So we're not talking about like speaking like, you know, like Cantonese. We're not talking about Tagalog. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the vocabulary, right? Conceptual vocabulary. The conceptual vocabulary that we have, it doesn't just describe or interpret our experience. It literally constructs our world, right? This is one of the weird things about language in general. When you study cognitive linguistics, you realize the fact that we create the world with the language that we already have, right? So it's not as though there's something out there and we just use these tools and language to just say, this is actually what I see. If you don't have certain vocabulary, you won't really even notice it. It almost doesn't really exist in your mind. Like, give you an example of how colors developed. There's a really interesting book called Through the Language Glass by Guy Deutscher. And he talks about the development of colors, right? And he says the word for blue didn't really develop until really late in human history. Now, you're like, well, then how would you describe the sea? Well, if you read Homer, he starts out the Iliad by talking about the wine color sea. The wine, wine? Like, that's like reddish purple? How is the sea that color? Because they literally don't have the word blue. The blue dye didn't develop later on. So these words, like, now, can they physically see blue? You know, it's not that kind of a problem where they can't really, biologically can't see it. They see it, but they interpret what they see through a different word because they literally don't have that word. Now, if they learn the word, oh, they'll be like, oh, yes, sky is blue. But even if you look at the Bible and other places, they don't actually use words for color that way. And Deutscher's idea is the fact that, well, if you gave them the word, they'd be able to use it. But if they didn't have the word, they will readily use whatever words they already have. And so in ancient world, blue things don't exist. Think about how weird that is, right? Now, for Asian American, if you don't have words, that's where you're going to go. You're going to overextend to explain everything else. But you're not going to talk about racial experiences because a lot of us don't really learn Asian American-oriented racial experiences. Even when we Asian Americans learn about race, we literally learn it from a Black experience. The problem is there actually are particular ways that Asian Americans experience racism. So it doesn't really help us to see that, right? And people be like, oh, people can say, well, Asian Americans all came recently. I mean, we have over like 170 years of Asian American history. I think it's fundamentally part of the problem as well, right? We don't realize the fact that we have history, but even that is kind of erased as well. So depending on the categories and words that we use, that's literally how we are telling our story, how we describe our world, and how we present ourselves to other people as well.
It reminds me of when I'm in the classroom and in the beginning of the semester, a lot of my students are Asian American because I teach Asian American studies. And most of them will say, no, I had a pretty good experience. I didn't really experience, you know, microaggressions. I don't even think they know the word microaggressions a lot of times when they come into the classroom in September or whatnot. They're like, no, I didn't really experience racism. And then by the end of the semester, after having gained all this vocabulary to kind of fill in the gaps of their experiences, they have so much more they can retrieve in their memory and reinterpret because now they have words for it. I think that's what you're talking about. Is this something you also experienced too?
Absolutely. What ends up happening is this. I think we think of memory that way as well. Like we think that we remember everything and like all the facts of it is basically what we remember. Memory doesn't really work that way. You know, because memory is kind of reconstructive. We remember certain facts and then we reconstruct the rest of it. Our brain doesn't say, oh, this is car has like, you know, four wheels. It doesn't have to remember that. The car, you remember to some degree what a car is, and then you might fill in certain details. Now, what I'm trying to say is this. There's certain facts that we remember back when we recall our memory and our experiences. And we are recalling them and interpreting them based on the categories we have. So if you have different categories and different concepts, you might go back and realize, wait a minute, that's not really what happened. I mean, this happens with even different experiences. I realized that my mom was sad. Something was going on with her. It really wasn't me. And also, our memory is obviously selective as well, right? We literally erase things that doesn't really help our well-being. And to some degree, that's a good thing. Thank God that we forget some of these things, because if we remembered everything, we wouldn't be able to function, right? But at the same time, the vocabulary that we have helps us to interpret experience. So when we look back, we're using concepts already. And when these interpretive concepts change, our past changes, literally, like how we think about what happened to me changes. And so this is a story, Julie, exactly what you're saying. I had this one student, this is actually like 10 years ago, like when I was starting to like develop this class on Asian American identity ministry. He was like, oh, I've never experienced racism my whole life, you know? Like people call me, the C word, like all my life, you know? But that's not racism. And the whole class is sat there and like, what? That doesn't even make any sense, right? And then later on, when he learned all the categories of microaggressions and how Asian Americans experience racism, he said, wait a minute, my nice childhood really wasn't that nice. Like I was just navigating and trying to survive. And I thought survival was normal, that this is just a normal human experience, without realizing the fact that this was a particular racial minority or Asian American racial experience. And then you start thinking about how you grew up slightly differently.
That's a really fascinating topic for me, because I've noticed in the kind of journey of developing a critical consciousness of being Asian American, there is this phase when you start to learn vocabulary where you get very angry. Right? And I think that has a lot to do with how we are reconstructing and reinterpreting something that we wanted to say that was just funny. That was just a joke. And then we learn words like microaggression. We learn words like internal oppression, right? And we learn these different racial stereotypes about us and how people experience Asian Americanness or whatnot. And then we get angry at the same things that we used to write off as funny or whatnot.
Yeah, and I some people are disturbed by this, right? Some people are disturbed by the fact that they're angry. I know students who say, I don't want to learn about all this stuff because I've seen people get really angry and that doesn't seem to be constructive. Or, I mean, you know, if they're Christian, they feel like, oh, this is actually like going to lead to sin or something like that. So they don't really want that. And generally what I say is this, all this toxicity is in you already. It's already in you. And now you're able to make sense of it. Now, it might be expressed in different ways. This toxicity might show up in weird ways. It might be like psychosomatic diseases. It might be like a deformed personality. You can't really form in a particular way. And you thought, this is just how I am. One of the reasons why I think Myers-Briggs doesn't really work for people sometimes is that Asian Americans sometimes in certain contexts will end up like navigating the world as an introvert. Like they really can't be an extrovert in a racialized world. They're a minority. They're getting picked on. They're trying to defend themselves, right? And some of the jokes, they're not really that funny. Yeah. So they become an introvert. But you're like, well, who are you when you're at home, when you're comfortable with your friends? Oh, I'm a total extrovert. I'm like, wait a minute. What does this really mean? And not knowing that introvert, extrovert can actually mean what gives you energy, you know, different ways of interpreting it. But I guess what I'm saying is, it's almost as though our personalities are being truncated or formed or deformed, or multiple things are happening here. And sometimes the language helps us to realize, oh, wow, this has really been totally messing up my life. And I'm beginning to realize what's really happening.
So maybe then anger is not the final chapter of this. It's really the beginning to healing, you know, telling a truer story, and also then returning to people around you and being a healing agent yourself. So I love this. Language is not just some neutral tool that we use to try to communicate something that is already naturally obvious, but it goes beyond that to shape identity, maybe even sometimes deform identity in the ways that I've also seen what I call like unnatural introverts among Asian Americans, specifically, I think, among immigrant people.
My wife, Judy, when she immigrated to the US when she was like six. She started to speak, trying to speak English, and kids made fun of her. So she didn't speak for 2 years.
Wow.
And people thought something was developmentally wrong with her. She's like, that's it. I mean, she's a stubborn, strong woman, right? She's like, forget it. I'm not going to speak. I actually know a lot of people who actually were super extroverts before they immigrated, and they literally end up being introverts. Something's happening in their personality, and then it actually kind of ends up being part of them in a way. So this identity and narrative and language are intertwined. So this is actually where this whole thing about developmental psychology and cognitive linguistics really kind of came about, is that in our class, this class that I teach, you're supposed to learn the language, and you're supposed to write an autobiography using the language, using other terms. And what I began to realize was that as they're writing their autobiography, and through the span of like 10 weeks, I could see people's identity shifting. And I was like, am I crazy or am I seeing something weird? That's part of the assignment. You're supposed to write what your life is about. And what they're realizing is that, oh, my life is not what I thought it was. Now, it might not be about race. It might be about cultural. It might be about migration. It might be multiple things. But they realize this is not my story. And because your story, your narrative is so intertwined with your identity. I mean, basically, your identity is a story you tell about yourself. So if language changes your narrative, narrative ends up impacting who you are, right? Your identity shifts over. So language and identity are basically intertwined that way. And also what I realized, not because I've been leading so many different formation groups where people learn language and tell their stories, I've been seeing a lot more intergenerational understanding, empathy, and healing.
Absolutely.
Like, oh, you know what? I get it now. My dad, he wasn't just an angry person. This man has suffered so much at work that when he comes home, he doesn't know what to do. And you realize this is not just a personality thing. I mean, he was going through so much trauma that he couldn't make sense of it. Or my mom was going through so much of this stuff. And you realize I just didn't understand what was happening. So at least that kind of understanding as well.
You know, I really appreciate that point. I've actually absolutely seen this in my life and in others. And that actually comes back to this topic of language, because if we're talking about people who are Asian American and don't have a language, I feel like a lot of times it's the first gen. They really don't have these categories even to think about racism. I think a lot of second gen Asian Americans, we route our own racial identity through blackness to try to understand what racism and race is. Although we're not really black, so that doesn't, we're not black at all, you know? So it doesn't help us fully. But then when we think about the first gen, like they don't even have that category at all. I remember I'm thinking about a lecture you gave where parents, Asian American parents, first gen might say something like, you have to work twice as hard to get like half of the benefits that everyone else gets. And you're saying maybe that's actually a piece of racial trauma.
Yeah, they'll say stuff like this is how America is. And what they're really, this is how they're articulating it, right? This is their country, right? How would you study English, Julie? Like English is for white people, right? So you should do something like, you know, engineering. You should study law, math, right? Study math, because math is something that people, like, you know, even white people say, oh, you're Asian American. That's something you should get. You recognize by that. But if you do something like, you do something liberal arts, then people worry. Now, later generations, I mean, you know, there are generations of Asian Americans, right? Like fourth, fifth generations Asian Americans. But it turns out that this is not just a first and second generation kind of a thing. It continues on, right? Generationally. And I think the point is that when so much of our lives, we're trying to make sense of our identity and this different aspects of ourselves. And this is the point I always make. If you have very crude language, you are doing kind of a cultural surgery with a sledgehammer. Oh, Koreanness is bad, or Taiwaneseness is toxic. I'm like, well, what part of Koreanness, right? And my friends and I, growing up as Korean Americans, we would say this. We knew there was collateral damage because there's Koreanness within us. So we were hurting ourselves as well. What we needed to do is something, have like a scalpel, right? Let's cut something out because we know there are parts of our heritage and parts of our context and even race. That we have our own problems. We get that. What we don't want to do is use such a crude articulation, crude language, crude conceptual tools that we are hurting ourselves in the process. If I have cancer on my hand, well, I can cut out maybe the skin, but I don't want to lose the whole arm. That's what's happening to Asian Americans. We are talking in such a crude way. Oh, you know how Indians are. We're all bad. Wait a minute. You're going to lose all of your Indianness because there's something toxic? Like, that's a crazy idea, right? There's too much collateral damage. And because we don't really learn, we don't go to school for Indianness, right? India is like a subcontinent. Like, what part of India? What aspect of India? If you grew up in the U.S., you might literally watch Apu in The Simpsons and be like, that's Indianness. I don't want that. Well, that's not beneficial. That's not beneficial for us when we're trying to make sense of our lives.
I want to ask you, if language matters, then even the smallest linguistic choices communicate things, then how do you feel about, for example, the hyphen between Asian and American? Like, does that matter? Does it communicate something?
This is one of those things that really irritate me quite a bit. I actually think that one of the ways I know if a person is educated, like trained in terms of what it means to be Asian American, because this whole thing, this whole season is about how do you get yourself educated as an Asian American, right? Because our education system is not helping us. So how can you be informed? Because growing up as an Asian American is not going to help you. Your mama's not going to help you. Your grandma's not going to help you to understand what it means to be Asian American. And that's actually, it's schooling. You need to be educated, right? So how do you know if you are trained as an Asian American, you are informed as an Asian American? To start off, one of the most important points that I think is that we have to kind of think about is when we say Asian American, I actually mean Asian American and not Asian or Asian hyphen American. Because Asian is actually people in Asia. And the reason why it's so problematic for Asian Americans to say, well, we're Asian, I mean, because people say, oh, they're Hispanic, they're Black, they're Asian. Okay. I know that people use that way. And I mean, I'm not a language police, but I would say because of the long history of the perpetual foreigner racism, that Asian Americans are never American, that people obsess about generations. I get that to some degree because a lot of us are recent generation, but it's almost as though Asian Americans can't really be American, right? That racism is deeply entrenched in American society. So given that, when you say Asian, it's almost reinforcing the fact that we are foreigners. Now, if we say Hispanic American, African American, and Asian, you'll notice right away because, wait a minute, when you say African American, that means something very, very different than African. Because they're Africans, like Nigerian immigrants coming, right? So saying Asian versus Asian American is actually a big difference, right? I always distinguish and say, hey, I'm Asian American, not Asian, because there are people in Asia and I'm not trying to foreignize myself, right? And also the hyphenation. I mean, now the kind of a journalistic norm has switched away, right, from using the hyphen. Because what people realize is that hyphen communicates the fact that we're Asian and American. And if you don't have the hyphen, I'm describing what kind of an American I am. I do think the Asian hyphen American, once again, kind of enforces this kind of a foreign idea, the fact that, well, I'm not really American. I have like dual allegiances in a sense. And the truth of the matter is, a lot of us, when we go back to Asia, we know we're not Asian. Like you and I go back to Korea, they're like, oh, they're noticed by the way. Like you're Korean American. You are like totally different from us. It's another way of kind of foreignizing and saying, well, you're not really just normal American. Like, whenever I talk about Americans, I always include myself. Now, if I want to talk about white people, I'll say white Americans. But I never say American versus Asian and include myself in the Asian. That would make no sense because I'm American. So it's either white Americans and Asian Americans, or we're Americans, all of us together. And America itself is a diverse place. But this is a very, very important point. When people are talking, I say, well, look, don't let people just get away with calling people Asian. Like, if you're Asian American, say, oh, are you talking about Asians or Asian American?
I think those are really good concrete takeaways. Don't say Asian when you mean Asian American. And consider the implications of using Asian hyphen American, because it almost connotes a compromised sense of Americanness.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to be like patriotic or anything like that. I think for me, as a theologian and as a Christian, one of the reasons why I really kind of emphasize Asian Americans being Americans is that this is the place of our discipleship. This is the place where we have to love our neighbors. This is basically what it means. So what I don't want us to be like, oh, you know, I belong somewhere else and I don't care about these neighbors here. What does it mean, the fact that this is the theater of how we live out our faith? I think owning where we are and the location that we find ourselves in really matters a lot. As a theologian, I exert this thing, saying, oh, you need to own the fact that you're American, because it'll help you to live out your faith in a very concrete way in your neighborhood, in your society, right? And not dream about belonging to somewhere else, because that's not even true. All right, well, that's all the time that we have today, but we'll continue our conversation. This has been Centering, the Asian American Christian Podcast.
Thank you for joining us, and please tune in every other week as we continue to discuss language and Asian American life.
Remember, God loves and embraces all of who you are.